This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Consuming the news for the past 10 days has been both physically and emotionally exhausting. New reports, corrections, bulletins, warnings, tweets, updates, and your heart beats faster and faster.
But before the bombing here, the bright light of breaking news shone on North Korea and nuclear war, or potential nuclear war.
And before that, budget Armageddon in Washington.
Today, there's bird flu spreading out of China.
And coming next, after the break, the next crisis. So don't touch that dial.
From one crisis to the next, media watcher Douglas Rushkoff says we're in the golden age of present shock, a time where the story never ends and neither does the anxiety.
And Douglas Rushkoff joins us from New York. He's a media theorist and a professor at the New School in New York. He's the author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now. And Douglas Rushkoff, welcome to Radio Boston. It's really good to have you.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
And listeners, what's been your reaction to this news coverage of this latest crisis of the attacks in Boston? Too much? Too little? Have you had to turn it off? Or are you still tuning in? Has it all put you in a state of present shock? You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Douglas Rushkoff, we wanted to talk to you because we saw a piece you wrote recently for CNN in which you ask, is this the new normal? And you say the answer is yes, in more ways than you might think. And then you say the old ways of understanding and responding to conflicts and threats no longer apply. What do you mean by that?
Well, we used to be able to use stories to understand really a whole lot about our world, whether it was Walter Cronkite at the end of the day, who was able to wrap up pretty much any global event into a story with a beginning, middle, and an end, or whether it was the kind of politics and activism and movements we were involved in, which always had, you know, a clear-cut enemy, a goal, some sort of ends justify the means journey to our, you know, keep our eyes on the prize and realize the dream. In some ways, both as a result of our 24/7 media and maybe even causing our 24/7 always-on media, is this notion that those stories aren't really real, you know, that you get there and things are kind of the same, that we've been fooled, that these stories were used to manipulate us, whether by an advertiser or some charismatic leader. And I think people are, in some sense, it's healthy that they're growing up and realizing that you don't really make progress in that way, that progress is somehow, you know, much more incremental, less dramatic. There's not really some big, bad, single enemy there that we can just get rid of. That our problems are really problems much more of sustainability than of conquest. Mm. You know, and that's a much more difficult landscape to live in.
You write, though, about this 24-hour cable and internet news cycle and what it's doing. And you just touched on something that I found really profound, and that is how we want to understand the world through the process of a narrative arc that makes sense. Are we looking? Do we need to have that beginning, middle, and end, and then sort of Walter Cronkite telling us that's the way it is? But as you write, the story these days just doesn't end. Nor does the anxiety. It just goes on and on and on. So, what's that doing to us?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it pins us to our devices, right? It's part of what compels us to keep CNN or MSNBC or NPR or whatever it is on 24/7 to sort of cling to the little details. Mm. So, you know, we have a suspect. No, we don't have a suspect. Yes, we do have a suspect. This is his picture. No, it's not his picture. That's a picture of someone else. No, it is his picture. No, this is the picture. You know, that all these details give us that sense of traction and orientation. But kind of the more we live that way, the more we realize there is no real traction that way. It's like being in that video game Temple Run or something where you're just moving and going and turning and this and that. And it's exhausting to the point where you realize, well, you know, I mean, if you're living in Boston and you need to know whether you can be inside the house or not, that's real. But, you know, for the rest of us who aren't really there locally, you know, maybe you don't need to be plugged in to the second by second newscast of what's happening, because that's not even what's going to turn out to have been happening anyway.
Sure. And does it compromise our ability to respond to these events in useless ways? I mean, obviously, it can be an enormous time suck. It can create all kinds of stress and this sort of endless, you know, plugging into this endless. I've got to give you. I want to credit my producer, Alex Kingsbury, with this. He called it a stream of crisisness, you know, being always a part of this, this stream of crisisness. But beyond it just sort of being emotionally exhausting, does it actually compromise our ability to respond to these events in ways that might be more productive?
Well, it certainly does. I mean, the reason why this works so well is that the technologies that we're using every day, from our SMS to Twitter feeds to Facebook updates and 24/7 hour news, that's much more appropriate for someone living in a newsroom or in an emergency room or an air traffic controller, right? I mean, I remember when I was an intern and doing at PBS, you know, in the that printer would ding, you know, it would ding four times if it was a really important story coming through, or three times, you know, and you were like on duty, right? And it was a rush. It was exciting, but you didn't live that way, right? You went into the newsroom and you worked a shift and you were exhausted and exhilarated and all. Now we're all walking around with that level of excitement and exhilaration, and usually about inane things, right? You know, Ashton Kutcher popped a zit, you know, alert, alert, AP press, you know, Twitter, Twitter, you know, but it works really well when, as we just saw, when there's a sort of real-time crisis, when there's actual, you know, people dying or something happening, and you know it. But it brings us all into that state of kind of deep panic and anxiety, to the point where we're just longing for something to end it. You know, and I saw when they found the kid in the boat, right, God, man, whatever we're supposed to call him, that to me, a 19-year-old is still a kid at this point. They find that guy in the boat and they drag him up, and you see the newscasters on cable going, and justice was done, the story is over. You know, it felt more like these were people just relieved that the marathon news cycle had some sort of punctuation to it. The story itself, what does this mean? Are there others? Is this a random occurrence? You know, we don't really have those answers. We don't know if we're at the beginning of something or the end of something. You know, it was really more about the news itself, the news cycle, the media itself, than it was about the story they were trying to tell.
Listeners, we're talking to Douglas Rushkoff. He's author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now. And we're talking to him particularly about the recent uninterrupted coverage of the Boston Marathon bombing and what this does to us as a society, this on all the time, anxiety inducing minute by minute coverage. Give us your thoughts. You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Roslindale. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling to say that when 9/11 happened, I actually was home from work that day sick. And I spent the entire day glued to the TV, just awash in the images and the happenings and the mistakes of what was happening here, what was happening there, and the anxiety that it produced lingered for such a long time in me. And as a Boston resident now, obviously I needed to be abreast of what was going on in the city, but I intentionally did not watch any TV the entire week because I knew that the same sort of thing would happen and it would just be needlessly anxiety provoking.
Barbara, you sound like a wise woman. Douglas, there's Barbara who just switched it off and said, enough.
I know, and there's this sense, I mean, there's guilt that, oh, am I putting my head in the sand? Mm. You know, but there's also the sense, you know, there's something going on right now. You know, there's someone probably just blown up somewhere in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, you know, you could stay on it. I mean, I had a student at NYU who created a drone report, which tweets out to you every time there's a drone attack. And you look at that thing, I mean, oh my gosh, they're just happening all the time. So there's a certain point where you go, you know, yeah, somebody's being bitten by a shark, you know, a plane is crashing. There are all these things happening, but at a certain point, If you're paying attention to all of those things, you're not paying attention to where you actually are in the moment. And that doesn't mean you're isolating yourself. It just means you're not extending every single one of your neurons out to every single thing that's happening, you know, everywhere else in the world. Mm. So, you know, I commend her, but it's hard for us, particularly sure. those of us who want to consider ourselves plugged in, to unplug.
You know, in your book, Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now, one of the ideas that you put in play that I found really intriguing is you say that we now have a new relationship with time, in part because of this sort of being plugged in all the time. What is that new relationship? And why is it a bad thing?
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It could be a great thing, right? Mm-hmm. If we are emerging, you know, from the time is money industrial age, if we're emerging from, you know, 1,000 years of looking at time in terms of, you know, interest bearing currency and increasing our efficiency and expanding over time and year over year results and quarter over quarter, you know, earnings increases, then the stepping into a digital timescape, right, into this new now, into mm-hmm. something that's less concerned with the future and growth than it is with what are things actually worth, then that's great. You know, when the internet first came around, I looked at it as, oh my gosh, we're all going to get to work in our own time from home in our underwear and, you know, not have to go clock in at work anymore. And we seem to have done the reverse with it, right? We've used it instead to track ourselves and to give every worker a BlackBerry or now an iPhone yeah. and, you know, keep everybody always on all the time. So I still think the opportunity is there for us to answer your email at the end of the day rather than responding to every time your phone vibrates with a new message. It's going to create time for you rather than take time away. But we haven't yet really adjusted to this new timescape. We haven't really taken authority over our time.
Fascinating. Let's go to a couple more calls at least. Charles is calling from Roslindale. Hi, Charles. You're on the air with Douglas Rushkoff.
Hey, Douglas. Very nice to have you on the air. I've appreciated your work for quite a while and all of it. Maybe not all, but a lot of its great permutations. And the thing that was interesting to me was the idea that we're not only, it's not always now, it's always here. Everything is in my own backyard. I can't get away from anything. It's always right in my presence.
So you're not just talking about, for instance, Boston, you're talking about
Boston.
Yeah.
So this is pertinent to me, but there were millions and millions of Mesa people who aren't anywhere near Boston. Who were drawn into this thing, and that happens all over the place. I mean, I'm constantly being told all over the globe. And to me, it's very interesting. If I would love to hear Doug mash up the space, the time together.
Charles, I think we got it. Douglas, did you get that? Charles's line was just breaking up, but this idea that there is also sort of this everywhere concept.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the when sharks attack phenomenon, you know, where, you know, sharks have been attacking people about the same rate, I'm sure, over the last 50 years. But now that we've got, you know, we get Shark Week on Discovery Channel, whatever it is for, you know, and you see it on it feels as if everybody's getting attacked by sharks all of a sudden, right? So every shark attack that happens anywhere in the world is now sort of all compressed right into our time right now. That's not the real now, right? That's the now that we're yearning for. Oh, is the now of that Twitter feed. I want to be everywhere all at once. But what that does is it really takes away the now that you're in. And that's the now that I'm concerned we're losing touch with, is the now of who's in the room with you? You know, who could you be making eye contact with? What conversation are you willing to interrupt with that SMS, with that call waiting, with that thing? And that's the now, the sort of local now. Well, you guys in that news story, it was real, but it's the local now that I think we ignore at our peril, you know, and it's the local now that really the industrial age was about disrupting that local now. Hmm. So you don't go to your local merchant, so you don't engage with people in your community. But the digital age, with whether it's Etsy or eBay or whatever we're using, actually gives us a chance to reconnect locally, which will be, you know, I think is a great now to be engaging with rather than that distracted now of every tweet coming at you.
Let's go to Rob, who's calling from Danvers. Hi, Rob. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a phenomenon that I'm kind of curious about. I call it looping. But if you watch any of the news channels, They have the continuous cycle of video that they repeat over and over with different crawls and so forth. And how does that affect us, that you just, you know, constantly, repeatedly assaulted with the same images over and over?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, of course, we saw a lot of that last week. We saw a lot of it in the wake of 9/11. What do you think, Douglas Rushkoff?
Well, it's interesting. It's the same way if you, you know, show a child pictures of a party or something that they've been to. Their memory of the event ends up really forming around those images rather than whatever it was they experienced, right? So we know those same 20-second cyclical loops of footage, and they end up being the sort of most important things. They end up shaping our memory of what's happened much more than they would if we had a kind of more of a real-time timeline. You know, the other thing that happens, I see a lot on the 24/7 news, is that perpetual thing, like the Deepwater Horizon, when it was sitting up in the screen as it was just belching its oil out. You know, that wasn't a loop. That was just this weird real-time perpetual nightmare of just blah, 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 blah. The oil's coming out, the oil's coming out, the oil's coming out.
Right.
It just added to that sense of helplessness in a very bizarre and new way.
You know, I'm interested in asking you this. I mean, a lot of I relate to a lot of what you say as a consumer of news and as someone who now and then needs to sort of turn this stuff off. And as you say, be here now. But I'm a journalist, and so I'm obviously really connected to this stuff for big chunks of my life. I'm wondering if you think there are things that journalists, that news organizations, that media outlets need to reconsider in terms of the way they do business, the way we do business? Or is the genie just out of the bottle and this is just the way it's going to be from here on out?
Well, I think certainly news people, journalists have to determine whether they're in the business of doing live feed, kind of almost surveillance news, reality TV. You just stick a camera on the war zone and leave it at that. Or are you in the business of helping people make sense of what's happened? You know, one is journalist as in, you know, news of the day, and the other is journalist as in, I'm going to really chronicle and make sense of what's going on. And where we tend to get in trouble is where we're not really sure which of those two things we're doing. Mm. So we end up rushing to make sense of things before everybody else by doing the quick tweet. And then we end up making that really stupid tweet, right? Where we said something because we wanted to be first or whatever. Or, you know, we are trying to editorialize something rather than just let it be. You know, this is what's happening out there right now. So in either case, I think if you make the choice, you can be a lot better off. And it also has to do with, you know, it's cool and all, but to put someone out there, you know, and I saw, a financial journalist standing on the street of Boston for 20 hours until something happened. It's like, that's not the right person to be there. That's not someone who knows how to cover this thing. This sense that all journalists are somehow interchangeable. I mean, I'm really good at analyzing, you know, media and news and technology, but I'd be unqualified to be sitting in the Washington press corps.
Sure.
You know, and this sort of interchangeability is a real problem.
Well, let me ask you how I'm curious to know how you navigated through the last week from New York with this gripping story here in Boston. How did you sort of balance your intake of what was going on?
I don't know. I'm a very weird case. So I...
Yeah, but you're smart and interesting, and so I want to hear.
Yeah. Well, after the initial tragedy, right, which I watched pretty much like everybody else, which is, oh my God, there's people dead. How many people dead? What's going on there? You know, in my one of my sister cities. After that, I was really watching the news media more than I was watching the news. I was watching the human beings on the other side of the camera trying to fill time, sort of vamp until ready is what they used to say in the theater business, when you're kind of playing the introduction and you wait and watching them fill and watch. I was watching the humans, you know, try to make sense more than I was really watching it for the story at that point, because I knew I wasn't going to really know what happened until hours or days later.
Well, Douglas Rushkoff, thank you so much for joining us today and bringing your perspective and wisdom. It's been great having you. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate you bringing me in to discuss something that you've actually lived a whole lot.
That's Douglas Rushkoff. He's the author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now. Listeners, the conversation continues at RadioBoston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the latest in the healing process for those hurt in the bombings. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.